Harley Davidson is getting banged up by President Trump's tariff war. The iconic American motorcycle maker announced Monday it will shift some production outside of the United States to avoid retaliatory European Union tariffs on U.S. exports like its large motorcycles. The EU tariffs went into effect last week in response to Trump's steel and aluminum penalties on imports from the EU. Ironic, since Trump's steel and aluminum tariffs are aimed at protecting U.S. jobs.
It might not seem like it, but Germany, the industrial powerhouse of Europe, never fully embraced the digital age. Germany fears that if it doesn't catch up, that it'll be eclipsed by the sheer scale of rivals. Berlin has a healthy tech and startup scene, but it doesn't extend to the rest of the country. For example, only 2% of Germany's broadband internet customers are hooked up by fiber optic cable. In the much bigger United States, it's 12%.
Ride-hailing company Uber goes to court on Monday in a bid by the $70 billion business to continue operating in its most important European market. The Silicon Valley firm is seeking to overturn a decision stripping it of its license in London. Regulator Transport for London shocked the company with that decision in September, citing failings in its approach to reporting serious criminal offences and to background checks on drivers. The company has since made several changes, including the introduction of a 24/7 telephone support line and the proactive reporting of serious incidents to the UK Capitol's police.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's June 26th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. We're happy you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've got a great broadcast for you today. In just a few minutes, we'll bring in our first guest, Holly Agres, here, the CEO and president of First Lady Cruises in Chicago. A little bit later in the program, we have a moving problem, maybe even a moving crisis in America. Henry Graybar will be here. He's written a story about this for Slate.com about people not moving, and this affecting pretty much all demographics, millennials, baby boomers alike. They're staying put. We'll tell you some of the reasons why. That's going to be about 5:40 this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are off about 11 points. NASDAQ futures and S&P futures are up just 3 and 1 point, respectively. Around the rest of the world, markets are generally higher, but not by much in Europe, with London, Germany, and France up just about a third. And in Asia this morning, markets are mixed, with the Nikkei going to end the day up just about 3 points, recovering a little bit from yesterday. And in China, markets are off by about a quarter. Oil is trading this morning at $68.25 a barrel. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. Apple CEO Tim Cook intends to continue lambasting U.S. immigration policies and other issues that trouble him to avoid falling into an appalling silence, as he called it. Cook outlined his views on when CEOs should protest government policies during an evening appearance yesterday at a business conference hosted by Fortune magazine. His remarks came a week after he condemned the Trump administration's since-reversed practice of separating children from parents accused of crossing the U.S. border illegally. The CEO of Apple said if he had dodged the politically charged subject, he would have been cast into the appalling silence of the good people category. And that's something that he never wants to be a part of, he told the gathering last night. U.S. health regulators yesterday approved the first prescription drug made from marijuana, a milestone that could spur more research into a drug that remains illegal under federal law, despite growing legalization for recreational and medical use. The Food and Drug Administration approved the medication called Epidolex to treat two rare forms of epilepsy in patients 2 years and older, but it's not quite medical marijuana. We begin front and center this morning with First Lady Cruises. The CEO and president of the company, Holly Agres, is with us this morning. Holly, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's so nice to see you. And before the show, we were kind of showing you around a little bit. And I said, I think your office is probably better than our office because you get to be outside in the beautiful skyline and on the river all day.
Well, it's certainly a beautiful place to work, but we don't have quite as much technology.
Yeah. little less, but it's certainly nice. So tell us about what's new and what's happening at First Lady Cruises.
Well, it's really exciting. This year, we're celebrating our 25th anniversary working with the Chicago Architecture Foundation. And the Chicago Architecture Foundation places highly trained volunteer docent or tour guides on board our cruises and take visitors and residents on a 90-minute experience through the river canyons of downtown Chicago, describing more than 53 significant buildings and bridges.
This is something that tourists and locals alike love. I've been on this thing at least a dozen times.
Thank you.
And I learn something new every time I go.
Well, that's just it. Each docent, although they're trained for more than 100 hours before they're allowed to guide the tours, they have their own individual passion about which style of architecture they may like the best or which building is their favorite. And they really give a little bit different spin for the passengers on each cruise.
The cruise, too, is something unique. It feels like it's unique to Chicago. I was trying, as I was getting ready for our interview today, to think about other places where this might happen, and I couldn't think of many at all.
Well, really, when you think about even places around the world, big cities like London and Paris do have rivers running through them. However, they don't have the architecture of their city built right up to the banks of the river, so close where you can almost touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those cities require walking tours to really experience the different styles of architecture in those particular cities. So I think it's really unique in the world.
What are you doing to celebrate this anniversary?
Well, the Chicago Architecture Foundation is really guiding the celebration in that they are also moving. WGN moved, but the Chicago Architecture Foundation is moving to 111 East Wacker, just down the street from you, at the corner of Michigan and Wacker, and they're going to be opening a architectural museum.
Oh, nice.
And so it will be a wonderful addition to the neighborhood, and it'll be a wonderful addition for people to explore the museum before or after their cruise.
Right, because they might get the itch while they're on the cruise to learn more, and that's a nice adjacent place to go.
Right, and that's certainly what we hope, is that people are inspired to learn more about architecture.
First Lady Cruises has been around a lot longer than 25 years. You've been an institution on the river for what, 80? Is it 80 years now? Or?
It's around 83 years. In the 1930s, my husband's grandfather emigrated to Chicago from Portugal. And he started a speedboat ride company. It took about six people across the lake for 25 cents each. And that was before the invention of air conditioning. So people wanted to go fast on the lake and get cool. Yeah. And the business survived the Great Depression by giving residents and visitors a respite from the Depression. And now we're in the fourth generation, and it's definitely grown over 83 years.
What has changed in that time? I know from speedboat to the big boats you have now is probably the most obvious, but I guess there's a lot that's the same, too, isn't there?
Well, our crews are highly trained, so I think we've invested certainly a lot more money in safety and training. And one thing that's interesting is that in the early days, the Wrigley Building was the shining star on the lakefront.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's virtually impossible to see the Wrigley Building from the lake.
Right. You almost have to get on the boat and take the cruise in to
that's right.
get a nice view of it.
Right.
I want to, when we come back, talk a little bit about operations, how you're doing, what maybe you will see for the future coming up, but also a little bit about more about the history, maybe where the name came from, that sort of thing. But we need to take a break, so hang on with us. Holly Agra is with us, the CEO and president of First Lady Cruises.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, stocks fell sharply yesterday with the S&P 500 and NASDAQ seeing their biggest one-day drop in about 2 months. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gave up 382 points to close at 24,252 on investor concerns about the deepening U.S.-China trade dispute. President Trump says he's surprised by Harley-Davidson's decision to move some of its production out of the U.S. to avoid foreign tariffs. The European Union has slapped heavy import duties on U.S.-made luxury items, including Harleys, in response to Mr. Trump's tariffs on European steel and aluminum shipped to this country. A federal judge has dismissed lawsuits filed by the cities of San Francisco and Oakland demanding that five of the world's largest oil companies pay to protect their residents from the impacts of climate change. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Holly Agra, the CEO and president of First Lady Cruises. In studio this morning, Holly's been looking out our wonderful skyline studio windows at her staff down on the river. This is a nice bird's eye view to watch things going on, especially your cruises.
Yes, everything is just beginning to wake up on the Chicago River.
I wanted to talk to you about that. And, you know, you've seen, obviously, many, many years of what's been happening on the river. What do you think? How do you like the revitalization? How is it different from, let's say, 20 years ago?
Well, definitely it's more vibrant. People are coming out, enjoying the river, and the developers are clamoring to build close to the river, and that's giving us even more architecture to look at. And it's just becoming really Chicago's second waterfront.
You mentioned that your company is multi-generational. What are the challenges and I guess, blessings of that? Talk to us about working in a multi-generational company like that.
Well, I'm thrilled that both of our boys and my daughter-in-law both all work in the business, and so it's great to see them on a regular basis. But sometimes it can interfere with a, you know, sort of family dinner instead of just talking about our personal lives. A conversation always seems to end up talking about business in some way, shape, or form.
Do you ever think about what your relatives way back in time would think about how things are running today? And what do you think they would say?
Oh, I think they would be amazed, because I know when I first started, the second generation had the culture that if the sun was shining, people would come.
Yeah.
And now certainly we invest in a lot of sales and marketing to draw people every day of the week.
And it's more than, speaking of the marketing part of it, it's more than just the Skyline cruises. There are a number of different cruises. I know during the break we were talking about some of the ones I haven't been on yet. But that's part of it, too, is making sure you have the fresh ideas and new ways of attracting people.
Yes, well, we really operate two companies, Chicago's First Lady and then the Mercury Skyline Cruises, which is the company that my husband's grandfather began in the 30s. And on the Mercury Cruises, we try to market to families. It's more than just sightseeing cruises. We have a canine cruise, and we have a 3D fireworks cruise, and it's a lot of fun. And then also on the Chicago's First Lady side, we started trying some yoga cruises.
Hmm.
And that's also been very popular in the early morning hours.
You mentioned the canine cruise. There's some backstory to that I wasn't aware of. Tell us how that got started.
Yes, well, certainly after the events of 9/11, tourism was highly impacted, and we were a little bit worried as to how tourism was going to recover. So we thought about how can we market to the many, many residents of downtown Chicago and offer something fun to do with their families. And actually, I was working with one of your colleagues, Steve Dale, mm-hmm. who does the Pet Central show. And together we came up with offering this canine cruise every weekend. And it's been all of these years since 2001. And it's just been fantastic and a lot of fun for families to bring their dogs.
Tell us something else that we probably don't know about First Lady Cruises.
Well, the boats were built in, the Chicago's First Lady was built in Mobile, Alabama. So that was a very interesting venture. They're able to build all year round in Alabama. Mobile, especially Bayou La Batterie, where the boat was built, was very popular for building fishing boats. And they took on our project, and they did a wonderful job. And then the boat sailed up the Mississippi River for 7 days and 7 nights to get to Chicago.
Oh, that's very cool. So, this is a business show. We like to talk about how business is going.
Mm-hmm.
How is business going? Is your company a healthy company? And what do you see for the future?
Well, we're certainly always looking forward to additional growth. We have invested in new, more modern, and a little bit larger vessels over the last few years. Recently, we built two vessels in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, and so a little bit closer to home. And we work very closely with CHU Chicago, the Chicago Convention and Tourism Bureau here in Chicago, luring conventions and leisure visitors to Chicago. And, of course, that's the backbone of our business.
And then finally, where does the name First Lady come from? Is it named after someone in your family?
Well, we started with the Skyline Queen and the Skyline Princess, and we talked about it again at a family dinner, and it was my mom that came up with First Lady as a superlative to Skyline Queen.
Nice, nice. Well, Holly, it's wonderful meeting you, and all the best to you, and happy anniversary, and continued success to you and everyone.
Thank you so much.
Holly Agra is the president and CEO of First Lady Cruises in Chicago. Make sure you check them out online, and we'd love to have you back anytime you want to come back.
Great, and we welcome you to take a cruise and bring your microphone.
Oh, very nice. Thank you, Holly.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Rework, a nonprofit sales training program that helps minority candidates find jobs at Chicago tech companies, has brought in Shelton Banks as its next CEO. Rework has trained nearly 50 students since 2016 and has a placement rate of almost 90%, connecting applicants with companies like Groupon, Sprout Social, and CDW. Alcom Health founders Rishi Shah and Shraddha Agarwal have named two board replacements to fill their roles after Shah and Agarwal stepped down from the board last week. Tara Cooper, a former Rahm Emanuel spokeswoman, and Robert Feely, an investor and previous CFO at the Duchess Wall Group, round out the seven-person board. And Amazon announced that Prime members across the country will get an additional 10% off select items in Whole Foods stores, including 11 stores in Chicago and more in the suburbs. Customers who get groceries delivered from Whole Foods also get the 10% discount. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. America has a moving crisis in that not very many people are moving. Even millennials seem to be staying put. A new report out about this in Slate. Henry Graybar is the author of the story. He is with us this morning. Henry, what did you find from your reporting and from the stats?
Well, so we've known for several years that Americans are making fewer interstate moves than they have at almost any time in history. And what this latest Harvard Housing Report shows is that this is also happening at a local level. So not only are Americans moving less between states, but they're also moving less at a local level.
And what do the numbers say? I mean, how significant is the reduction?
Well, so it's ticking down by small percentage points, but you got to remember, this is a massive number of people. So the decline is from 13% of Americans making moves in 2006 to 12% in 2013. Now it's down to 11%. So that may seem like a small decline, but in reality, that's millions of fewer moves. And the decline is more pronounced among young people. If you look at people 20 to 24-year-old, 34% of them moved in 1996. Last year, just 24% of them moved.
So what is behind the numbers? Why are we seeing this?
There's a few things going on. One of the issues is that America is getting older. Older people move less. They're more likely to own their homes. And so the gradual aging of America's population is necessarily taking that mobility rate down a little bit. But there's something else that's happening, which is that as these older people settle into their homes, there's been a paucity of houses on the housing market. So it's getting a lot harder for younger people who might want to make a move to find a house to move into.
Let's start with the older part of that first. I guess the reasoning for older people staying put is, hey, I like my house. I want to stay here. Is that generally the reason?
Yeah, there's two things. I mean, number one, older people have been in the workforce the longest, and they're more likely to have attained home ownership. And so that makes it easier for them to stay in their place as they get older and less likely to downsize. And yeah, they love their houses and they don't want to leave. So that's been going on for decades. I don't think that trend has changed. What has changed is that there are so many more old people now as the boomers enter old age.
Right. And this we've heard this in many different aspects. And boomer is overdoing health care. We're seeing stress on the health care system, other systems as well. It's not surprising that we're seeing it in housing as well. The part of this that I think probably will surprise everybody is that the millennials aren't moving as much. Does that have anything to do with the wage part of the story, that we've seen wages go up very slowly and we're still not seeing that kind of growth?
That's definitely part of it. If you look at the way that wages, rents, and home prices have all evolved in the last 30 years, it's clear that wages are at the bottom. I think wages have increased for young people by about 5% in the last three decades, which is probably below the rate of inflation, to say nothing of the rate of rent and home price increases.
Go ahead.
Well, so that's obviously, that's a big element of this. And the other element is on the other side, which is that the home prices have skyrocketed. Even since the recession, they've recovered most, if not all, of their value in many markets, and wages haven't kept pace.
We've been talking about demographics. Let's talk a little bit about geographic. Is any of this, is it worse in one state compared to another, or are we seeing these trends all across the country?
Well, we think that there may be two components to this. One of them is cultural and one of them is economic. So, I mean, and I'm talking about younger people here. The cultural component is that there are more dual earner households. The rise of working women has pushed marriage and childbirth back. For the first time, American women are more likely to have kids in their 30s than in their 20s. And all that pushes off home ownership for young couples in many cases. So that's the cultural component of it. But the economic component is huge, and this is where geography comes in. We know that some cities have housing prices that can be double or triple what they are in other cities. You know, you look at San Francisco, San Jose, Los Angeles, coastal markets. And in those cities, the Harvard report shows that the household formation rate among millennials falls by 10 percentage points if you move from the 25 most affordable cities to the 25 least affordable cities.
And that means what, in layman's terms?
So household formation basically means I'm deciding to move in with my partner or by myself and create a household of my own, okay, as opposed to, say, living with my parents. And what that means is that there's clearly the housing market is having an enormous influence on millennials' decisions to buy a place, to rent a place of their own, to get married, to have kids. The situation that the housing market is in these most expensive cities is clearly influencing the way people decide to go through life.
I was really surprised in this story, and this is kind of an interesting part of this, too, on the other side of the coin. Those places where there's rent stabilization or where there is significant property tax relief in place, that could be having a lock-in effect for some people.
Yeah, I think that's true as well. In New York City, certainly, the situation is anomalous, of course, because the rents are so high and the rent stabilization program is so expansive. But it's definitely true that when people get into a good subsidized apartment that they like, they won't leave even if they're one 75-year-old man living in a three-bedroom apartment, because it's clear that there are no better alternatives on the market. In California, where they have Proposition 13, which froze property tax rates in 1978, it's if you're an older homeowner thinking about downsizing, you could face a massive property tax increase by selling your old place and moving into a new one. So it's true that some of these programs that aim to increase affordability for people who are currently in their homes can have a detrimental effect on the housing market for everyone else.
Are there any other impacts that are kind of echoing from this? I would imagine that there may be some other not necessarily economic, but socio impacts of having people stay in one place longer than they used to, or not.
I think that's definitely true. It's clear, as I said before, that it's influencing the rates of household formation. So it's possible that in cities where it costs more to buy a home, that millennials might be pushing off marriage and having children because it's become so expensive. And that's not just about the housing market, of course, but that's certainly a factor. And then the other one, of course, is that young people may be less likely to move to metro areas or cities where they might be able to find the job of their dreams because they're feeling intimidated by the high cost of rents or housing. So it seems clear that the declining mobility rate is working in tandem with people feeling reluctant to go out and find the jobs that they might want.
And so what is going to be the end story here? Is there a solution? Are there solutions that perhaps are going to be coming, or are we pretty much going to be stuck with this downward trend going forward?
Well, what's strange is that you would think that the fact that we're in a basically producing fewer homes at any time in decades, I mean, we're in a massive housing shortage. Home builders have not recovered from the recession at all, even as home prices have shot back up. So your Econ 101 professor would tell you that this is not normal. Supply is supposed to respond to demand in this way. And so the question is, why aren't these houses being built? And housing market experts say there are land use restrictions, cost of building materials with terraces not helping with, skilled worker shortage, and fewer vacant lots in various cities. So all these things are holding back the housing market from recovery. And when I say recovery, I mean actually prices falling. Mm-hmm. So making it easier for people to get into the market. And until that happens, I don't see this mobility rate ticking back up again. Because the fact is, if you are trying to move to a place like San Francisco, your options are very, very limited right now. And until more homes start being built in these in-demand metros, I don't see that going anywhere.
Boy, and as we sit here and speak, you hear more economists talking about a possible recession coming sooner than later. How would a recession exacerbate all of this?
Well, paradoxically, I think for millennials who have been eagerly awaiting their opportunity to get into the housing market, a crash in housing prices would be probably welcome. So, you know, that's one element. Obviously, you know, once people start losing their jobs, there's all sorts of trickle-down effects everywhere. But what's clear is that these millennials who graduated from college or graduate school at the beginning of the recession and felt the wage effects from entering a very poor job market, they got jobs just in time to become eligible for homeownership at a time when home prices are at record highs. So they really got screwed twice over. So I think that, you know, for people who are sitting around renting and waiting to buy, I think they would probably welcome a small dip in housing prices.
Henry, good analysis. We appreciate you being with us this morning.
My pleasure.
Henry Graybar is a staff writer for Slate.com's Money Box. You can read more, again, at moneybox.com and at slate.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, we're seeing the flatness on Wall Street this morning turn into negative territory now, weakness as we head to the opening bell. Dow futures are off 51 points. That's good for a quarter. The S&P and NASDAQ are moving lower as well, heading to 8:30 Chicago time. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, the weekly report on crop progress out yesterday afternoon showing not much change in the condition of the corn and the soybean crops. After the market closed, USDA rated 77% of the corn crop in good to excellent condition, down from 78% a week ago. And the USDA rated 73% of the soybean crop as good to excellent. That's unchanged from a week ago and the highest on record for this time of the year. So at the end of the day, yesterday was a tough day in the grain market at the Board of Trade. July wheat down 14 and a quarter. July corn down 7.5 cents a bushel. July soybeans down 21 and a quarter cents a bushel. What about livestock? Well, that was a red screen as well. Live cattle futures down nearly 3%, spillover weakness from financial markets and expectations of rising cattle supplies that pushed the market down in cattle. And looking at the June live cattle contract, down $1.92, but August and October contracts were down the $3 daily limit. August feeder cattle down $3.27. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue has a busy day in Chicago today. He'll be here to give remarks at the United Fresh Produce Association show's keynote breakfast. Then he'll participate in the Wall Street Journal Global Food Forum luncheon and in a roundtable discussion mid-afternoon at the Chicago Board of Trade. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuels.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of other stories before we leave you this morning. The price of Jack Daniel's Tennessee whiskey will increase in the European Union because of the impact of the bloc's new 25% tariff. The EU is taxing a range of U.S. imports, including whiskey, in response to President Trump's decision to slap tariffs on European steel and aluminum. Brown-Forman Corporation spokesman said yesterday the price increase for Jack Daniel's will take effect over the next couple of months as stockpiled cases of the whiskey are sold off. It says European consumers are expected to see price increases of about 10%, but the prices may vary in some markets because local distributors and stores are involved in setting prices. Britain's leading car manufacturing trade association says investment in UK auto production has fallen by half in the last year due to worries over Brexit, the leaving of the European Union. The Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders says only £347 million, about $460 million, was invested in new models and facilities during the first half of 2018, compared to about £647 million during the same period last year. The group says the current government position on Brexit goes directly against the interest of the UK automotive sector, which has thrived on single market and customs union membership. Elsewhere this morning, a couple of stories involving tariffs again with Harley-Davidson. You heard this story yesterday about Harley-Davidson proposing to leave some of its manufacturing out of the United States into Europe. Stock in Harley-Davidson yesterday fell by about 4%. President Trump also tweeted about the motorcycle maker as an example of a U.S. business harmed by trade barriers in other countries, but also chastising them for giving up too soon. He said that Harley-Davidson was first to wave the white flag in the tariff dispute between the U.S. and European Union. He said, closing out his tweet, to hang in there as a message to the company. But the company is moving forward with plans to move some production to the European Union to avoid paying a more than 30% tariff hike in the United States. China and European Union have agreed to launch a group that will work to update global trade rules to address technology policy, subsidies, and other emerging irritants and preserve support for international trade amid U.S. threats of import controls. The EU vice president this morning says actions that, like the ones that President Trump has taken on tariffs, especially involving technology, will have major impacts on global growth. Companies worry the U.S.-Chinese dispute could chill global trade and economic growth if other governments respond by raising their own import barriers. Even before Trump took office, economists were warning countries that were tightening import restrictions and taking other steps to favor their companies over foreign rivals that could happen. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday. It is June 26th on the calendar today. We'll get the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index. A report about consumer confidence also due out today. The Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index is due. The State Street Investor Confidence Index. We've got a couple of bill auctions as well. And one Fed speaker, looks like two Fed speakers out today, Rafael Bostic and Robert Kaplan, speaking about monetary policy. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, June the 26th.